Welcome to the Weekly Workplace, where professionals come to find insights and inspiration for success. Hosted by the Missouri Training Institute, Dewey Thompson, Ray Lyon, and Brianna Larimer share their decades of experience training in workplaces across the nation and talk to other experts about what it takes to be a team player, a great manager, and a leader others want to follow. This is the Weekly Workplace.
Welcome to the Weekly Workplace, where professionals come to find insights and inspiration for success. My name is Brianna Larimer, business trainer and consultant with MTI. With you again today, we have Dewey Thompson, our director, and Ray Lyon, our associate director. And today's topic is on meaningfulness at work. And I kind of just want to say, oh, you know, when I think about this topic, I certainly reflect a lot on my own experiences in the workplace. So I'd love to hear from you all. When has been a time that you have truly found meaningfulness at work?
All right. Well, I actually was a school teacher in a previous life, and I taught high school, believe it or not. Back in the good old days, and I had a student. He was about 6'8". He was definitely a football player and an athlete, and he was in my cooking class. I taught family and consumer sciences, and I just taught a general cooking class. It was called Creative Cuisine, very cleverly named. Most people took it because they wanted to eat during the day. It was a very popular class. Anyway, I had this young man in my class and got to know him pretty well. His future aspirations, being the size he was to become a police officer. And so part of my just conditioning as a person, it was just to find out their vocation and to kind of help guide them. I felt like, you know, even back then as a teacher, that was part of who I was built to be. And so knowing that he wanted to be a police officer, you know, I dug into what it takes to be a police officer. And, you know, they do a lot of writing, you know, a lot of reading. You don't just, it's not all brawn, right? It's not all brawn. There's got to be other things that go into that. And what I also learned about this young man was he had a difficult time reading and writing. And I know when you do police reports and you take down a lot of that information, it has to be very accurate. And especially if you're having to go to court for things like that or having to file all of those reports. And so I just kind of logged that information in my mind. I didn't make any note of it other than just mental notes. Well, as the semester progressed with this young gentleman, it became very apparent to me that even though he wasn't necessarily a good reader, he produced some of the best food. And I mean, kids loved cooking what he made. Things that came out of his kitchen were always devoured. And it was around Thanksgiving. And we, you know, as a class, each of my classes got to make their own, you know, Thanksgiving meal. And then we'd invite who could come. We'd invite their families to come in and share that meal. And it was sometimes, you know, it was a 9 o'clock class and their parents would come and eat a Thanksgiving meal, you know, at 9:45 in the morning. But everybody was a good sport. And he had made the most perfect pecan pie from scratch, the whole thing. Absolutely beautiful. I mean, just the presentation itself. And so I just kept thinking, this kid needs to be a chef. I mean, he just had all of the right things, you know, didn't necessarily need a recipe, you know. Anyway, it went on. And so one day I just mentioned that to him. I said, you know, I think you really have a talent for cooking. And, you know, you could just see him even at 6'8", you know, just kind of straighten up and smile. And so I just kind of kept pushing towards that a little bit. And, you know, I said, have you done much investigation on what it takes to be a police officer? And, you know, they do a lot of writing and they do a lot of reading. And, you know, I think he wasn't aware of that. He just thought, I'm big, you know, and law enforcement would be my thing. And so anyway, long story long. He became my, you know, student of the year, just because of his just desire to proceed forward. And he actually became a chef.
No.
I know, I'm going to cry. Yeah. And I remember being at a really nice restaurant. It was called Blue. Mm. And I saw on the menu where it had his name. This was years and years later. And so I was sitting there with some friends one night and I said, is there any way that we could speak to the chef, please?
Oh. Did he come out?
Mm-hmm.
Oh. And hugs? Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
That's great, Ray. You know, yeah. And I'm watching your face yeah. now and you're tearing up because that must have given you such great satisfaction that you were able to change a life.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Yep, absolutely.
That was a very meaningful moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yep. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's beautiful.
What about you, Brianna?
I guess I'll go back to, we were talking about this, I think, before we started, and I was struggling to trying to find just one. But I'll go back to when I was a journalist. And I used to go against the grain a little bit. And I liked doing the feel-good stories. Imagine that. I had met a gentleman. I used to like to go to karaoke. And this was out in Phoenix. So there was a lot of opportunities to do karaoke. And I had met a man who really just enjoyed being in the karaoke environment. But I could tell just through appearance and just through some of the conversations from the locals in that establishment that maybe this gentleman wasn't living under the best conditions. And so I, of course, being curious about him and about his story, I went and sat with him outside while he was smoking a cigarette one night. And I just started talking to him. And I said, tell me a little bit about what, you know, about who you are. And so we ended up, as we start going through, I find out this gentleman was indeed homeless. And he would go from establishment to establishment doing these karaoke competitions to try and make wow. some money. And he just thoroughly enjoyed people. He liked being around people. He didn't care if he didn't win. He just wanted to make people smile through the songs that he sang. And he always did these odd songs, the fun ones, you know, can't touch this, you know. And this isn't, he was an older gentleman. And so it was always fun. And he'd get out there and he'd dance and he'd shake. And while he was doing these things, and it was just such a neat thing. And I said, you know what? I'd love to tell your story. I'd love to tell your story. Would you allow me to do that? And so he did. And we put together a video package on him. And that video package ran at the station I was at the time. And I sent him the clip. And of course, we connected and we watched it together afterwards. And I remember he sat there and he teared up. Mm-hmm. And we were sitting at the park watching it together on the laptop. And he starts tearing up and he looked at me and he gave me a gigantic hug. And he said, thank you for seeing me as a person. Thank you for listening to my story. And thank you for making me feel human. Mm, wow. And I'm still getting goosebumps thinking about it because that was powerful, mm-hmm. you know, and that's the power that a good positive news story can do. Mm-hmm. So that and that beautiful moment really made me want to just continue pursuing that mm-hmm. even more.
Definitely. Definitely. Oh,
yeah. You know, I can't I'm having a hard time thinking about just one example
yeah.
because, you know, I'm in this business because I do want to help people, you mm-hmm. know, and I love those moments when you've described two of them. They don't sometimes come along so quickly as much as I would want them to, but it is that phone call I get from a past participant that said, wow, you know, I tried something that we talked about in class and it really helped. So thank you.
Yeah.
And you know, it's those little moments that I kind of live for. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's interesting when we think about meaningfulness, mm-hmm. It's usually, you can trace it back to that one poignant moment, mm-hmm. Right. And then it just fills you up. And honestly, you can live on that for a while, you know, and go back. And when I think about teaching, I mean, I saw 130 students a year, you know, and I still go back and I think of this kid, you know, and I'm like, yeah, and I can think of others, of course, too. Or now when I'm shopping in Walmart, you know, and somebody's like, oh, you know, Ms. Lee, you know, and chase me down. Of course, I want to know their name and I can't remember because I went through hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of students. And, you know, I'll ask their name now still or, you know, what class they were in. But yeah, those things. But it was always a moment. Mm-hmm. It's always a moment. But let me ask you this. When I think about that, I mean, that was my moment. Right? Between me and that individual or that absolute episode. Did your managers have anything to do with your meaningfulness at work?
I remember having conversations with my mentor about this subject all the time. And, you know, in our jobs, we often go from one business to the next business. We do our work. We help give people maybe new ideas about how to solve a particular problem that they're experiencing at work. And then we leave. And my boss often had to help draw that connection of the work was meaningful, Dewey, because I kept thinking, well, I'm leaving and I don't get to hear, I don't get to see the outcome of my work so much, right? But so he would always try to point that out to me, you know? And so, yes, I don't think that leaders have anything to do with your own sense of meaningfulness, right? Yeah. They really don't. But I do think that they can destroy it pretty quickly. And I think good leaders are going to help you see the meaningfulness, right? Because they know you and they know what, you know, let's face it, meaningfulness is a great motivator, right? It motivates us to do more and more and more at work. And so when good leaders recognize that and then point that out through the recognition that they give you for that, that can help you see your meaningfulness, but they don't have anything in helping you find it, I guess. Right?
No,
I don't think
I don't think so either. Yeah. I don't think managers have much control over that. I can't give you meaningfulness at work.
No.
Right? I mean, that moment that you captured with that homeless man, that was all you. You know what I mean? That was all, you know, I could have had that exact same experience and not felt what you felt and not felt that connection, you know, for your job that you had at that moment. I could have just been a journalist writing a story or, you know, why didn't I have that experience with all the other 130 students I taught in that class? Right. You know, so it's you. But I think you're spot on when you talk about what I, as your manager, can take away from you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I mean, I think poor leaders can destroy a sense of meaningfulness. And to me, again, I go back to the idea of how important this is as a motivational factor.
Yeah.
You know, we're all motivated by our own things.
Yeah.
That's why I don't think a manager can give you motivation. They can recognize what already motivates you.
Sure.
Right. And oftentimes that's associated with your sense of meaningfulness. Why are you doing what you're doing? Why do you get up every single day, go in and put forth all this effort and all this energy into your job if you're not getting some kind of intrinsic value out of it? Now, don't get me wrong. We all need a paycheck. I get that. But there's lots of ways you can get a paycheck.
Right.
Right. So finding that career that aligns with you and aligns with your sense of meaningfulness, I think is the key to really building a meaningful career for yourself.
And what's interesting is what motivates you and demotivates you are not direct opposites.
Right. No.
Same with meaningfulness. What's meaningful for you, if you take that away, doesn't mean it's meaningless. It's a very interesting, you know, dichotomy, you know, things that make jobs meaningless, that managers have direct control over and that I think make jobs meaningless is the one thing right off the top of my head is when employees feel that they're being taken for granted.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know? When managers just take it for granted that Dewey's going to do Dewey's job and Brianna's just going to do Brianna's job, you know, and I don't have to recognize that. I just take you for granted mm-hmm. that you're going to show up and do your jobs. And I don't have to care for that. You know?
You know, I think that there's lots of things that managers can do to really destroy that sense of meaningfulness or destroy the environment, I guess, to make work less meaningful. You know, one, and I know, you know, businesses are all about making money, right? It's all about the bottom line sometimes. You know, we get that drilled into our heads. But when that becomes more important, maybe than the people that are helping you achieve that, then that can really, I think, destroy a sense of meaningfulness as well among people.
Oh, yeah. When anything is more important than your people,
right.
When the process is more important than your people. And I've said it before, you know, it's like valuing your fans more than your players.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, if you don't take care of your players on the field, mm-hmm. then there aren't going to be any fans in the stands anyway.
Exactly.
You know, so definitely your people are more important, or even the environment in which they operate in, you know, the safety mm-hmm. Or the equipment that they're using, whether it's a microphone, a computer, or if it really is tools mm-hmm. That they're using. They need to be safe tools. They need to be, you know, have the right tools.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think safety too, from a mindset perspective, you know, I can recall a time when I had a new supervisor who came in and was going around and having individual conversations with the employee, his subordinates, myself included. And he starts off the conversation with, well, they call me the hammer because I don't mind coming down on people when I have to.
Man, wow.
Well, welcome.
Yeah.
Amber. I mean, what do you think of that?
Right.
So it things like that immediately can start, I don't want to say, you know, at the drop of a hat, maybe destroy all of it, but they certainly start pecking away
right.
at your meaningfulness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I also think about times, other jobs that I've had where I didn't necessarily feel a sense of meaningfulness was oftentimes those situations where I was micromanaged, mm-hmm. right? Or I didn't feel empowered to do the job on my own. Instead, it was somebody always telling me what to think, somebody telling me how to think, somebody telling me exactly what to do, you know, put, you know, step one, do this, step two, do this, step three, do this. And I have no ability then to even use my own creativity or my mind to get my own work done.
Kind of to your point. So we were, my friends and family, the day after Thanksgiving, we always come together and we've got everybody from, you know, close to 60 all the way down to 3 years old. And we go and we play pool and do all the games at one of those big game places. And so we were up at the snack bar and they serve adult beverages. And so you guys know I'm over 21, right?
Oh, yes.
Okay. And so I'm up there with my kids and my grandchildren and ordering like a bucket of adult beverages and ice. Okay, so you get my point. And the woman behind the counter says, I need to see your ID. And yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I was like, really? Like, really? I mean, I'm holding a grandbaby, you know, I mean, really? Now, she doesn't have to know that that's my grandbaby. It could be my baby if she really thinks I'm just that young and beautiful. And I'm like, really? And she's like, yeah. And I'm like, really, really? And she goes, yeah, it's, you know, our law or our rule or whatever. And so, I mean, it's not her rule. But that to me is when you're taking away somebody's ability to use their common sense. Because
right.
clearly I am not 21 or not 21. I mean, that to me says, wait a minute, you don't have the good judgment to determine. Yeah.
And it slows the process down too, right?
It's ridiculous. But there's got to be little things to that. The other thing to the micromanaging. So I did work for like a hot minute for this one advertising company and in between jobs teaching. And he was a micromanager like to the nth degree. Mm. And we had this long board table and he liked the seats to be pulled out a certain distance from the table. And so after our meetings, he would, you know, we'd leave and we'd push our chairs under the table. And then he'd come around and he'd pull all of the chairs out a certain distance from the table. He would make us go downstairs and repark our cars if like somebody wasn't or was too close to the yellow lines between cars. And anyway, it was crazy.
A little OCD, huh?
Yeah. And wow. So every once in a while, because I'm just this ornery, I'd go and like, I'd push in all the chairs. Just because it'd drive him crazy. And he'd come and he'd go around the table and have to pull out all the chairs. Mm-hmm. And he was just that ridiculous.
Right. You know, that reminds me of... I think Stephen Covey talked about choices that people make when they are micromanaged or when they are coached, right, with a good leader. And he talks about the three choices that people can make. Is the first one is that they will rebel against the micromanager or they'll quit. Right. So you didn't quit, but you rebelled by pushing those chairs in.
I rebelled all around first, the table. And yeah. Then I quit.
And then you quit. Right. And if you don't make that choice, you might do what they call maliciously obey. Right. So you'll do it, but you'll do it kicking and screaming the whole way.
I probably did that too.
Yeah.
I did that with Mr. Hammer.
And the last one that he says when you are micromanaged as an employee, that your final choice is about you just willingly comply. But you're doing the bare minimum to get by. Something else comes along and you'll probably quit, you know, and find something else. So it's interesting how we've all done those little things in those types of environments, right? And it prevents us from seeing our sense of meaningfulness. It prevents us from finding that for ourselves, right? Yeah. Bad leadership.
And so funny because I'm the same person. You know, I'm the same person in this job that I was in that job, mm-hmm. but because of the environment that was created there, he will never, you know, reap the benefits of that passion, you know, because of that environment that was created. He was more wrapped up in the process. He was more wrapped up in, you know,
rules.
The pointless busy work. That, you know, go down. Everybody in the company had to go down and repark their cars. Are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. You know, instead of producing outcomes. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. It was weird. So when I think of this from a manager's standpoint, and I think about how we do what we do, this is one of those things where you need to be checking about how not to do these things.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. Because what you do as a leader creates the environment,
right,
to where people can either find that meaningfulness for themselves or they'll go somewhere else and look for it.
Right.
Right.
So you need to make sure, you know, that you're valuing your people. And I think that comes with knowing what's important to them, knowing what their strengths and their skills and what they love most about their job. And just asking them those things, you know, why do you come to work every day? You know, those are great questions. And where do you find meaning in this work? Mm-hmm. And do you have access to those opportunities often enough, right? I mean, those are great questions to have on with your one-on-ones when you're coaching, so that if you're not able to give them those opportunities, how can I?
Right, right. And I think another great thing that managers and leaders can do to help with this is to, like my old mentor, recognize it, right? When they are doing great work that does have meaning. And, you know, a lot of times we find meaningfulness in our service to other people, right? Mm-hmm. Whether it's our service to our customers, service to our employees, or whatever have you. But being a leader that recognizes those moments, you know, and helps tie that sense of meaningfulness to exactly the behavior that you're exhibiting or to the work that you're producing, the outcomes that you're producing. Be one of those leaders that walk around catching people doing the right things, making sure that you recognize them.
Yeah. And I think to speak to that, and you know, and Ray, you brought it up earlier too, when you had said that sometimes it means managers have to kind of maybe see it, like know you well enough to know what brings meaning. And for me, I'll share another quick story is I think about the supervisor I had had when I was at the police department. And I did a lot of videos at that time. I was kind of well behind on a lot of things because it was just a lot of work. And I remember he came to me with another task and he said, okay, we want to start this video campaign. And they're doing it in other police departments. It's called Why Wear the Badge. And I think that we need to do this as well. And I'm like, Doc, like my plate is full right now. And I just don't know if I can keep up with all this. And anyway, I went out. And I also knew that there would be resistance sometimes. You try to get officers to come on camera sometimes, and it can be they can be reluctant. And so it was building up my credibility with them, having to go out, find a place to shoot this video, having the time to edit it. You know, all this is going through my head. And my very first one I did, I went out, and sadly, this particular officer was voluntold to do this. And when we go out there, you can tell, again, just, okay, let's get this over with, was kind of the feeling. And then by the end of it, he comes up to me and he looks at me and he said, Brianna, I want to say thank you. And I said, for what? Like, very confused, for what? You know, and he goes, for reminding me why I do this job. And I was like, eyes start tearing up, of course. And it was so unique because the next morning I go back in and I talk to my supervisor about what happened. And I said, you won't believe it. You know, he thanked me. And like, I think I helped him, you know, and a lot. He goes, how do you feel about it? And I said, great, I'm ready to do some more. And he looks at me and he goes, I thought you'd like the project.
Oh,
and so that is exactly to your point. Although I couldn't see it at that time, he knew me well enough to know that this could have been a fruitful situation that would have brought more meaningfulness to me in that workplace.
Good for him.
Yeah.
I think it's important. Again, just make mental note. Are you doing these things on the good side and on the not good side? Are these things existing in your environment and you need to cease and desist immediately?
Right.
And many times this person just isn't in the right place. And they need to go be great somewhere else.
Yes. And I've been okay. In that situation.
Yeah.
I've been in that situation where other people found the work meaningful to them, but boy, that job was not for me.
Right.
And I tried and right. I tried, but I just couldn't. I couldn't do it. Yeah.
Well, any other final thoughts as we start wrapping up on this idea of meaningfulness at work?
You know, I know this is a warm, fuzzy topic, and I know you two have love it. and then yet I'm the one that got tears in my eyes talking about my favorite student. But I think it's important to have these conversations with your employees periodically. You know, put it on your calendar for your one-on-ones because this, you know, we spend a lot of time together.
We do. So
it's important to know what matters to your people.
And absolutely. Absolutely. And I guess the other thing I would say is check your environment. Are you creating a lot of backlogs, a lot of ineffective types of processes or extra steps and things and extra paperwork and things like that, that people don't find a lot of meaningfulness in, right? It's usually about, what brings that person joy, what brings that person happiness, and making sure that we align the work to those things.
Yeah, I guess the last thing I want to do is I do want to give credit to the authors that I did some research on this several years ago now, but that kind of started this dialogue for me in my own head. And that's Catherine Bailey and Adrian Madden. And when I was studying this idea of meaningfulness at work, and so they had written this article that's what makes work meaningful or meaningless. And so I do want to credit those authors that just kind of jog that memory in my mind about having these kind of conversations.
Absolutely. And if you're ever interested in any of the references we make during the shows, we will always put that information in the notes then. And so you can see that on the actual episode itself. We want to thank you for tuning in today. Go out, find your meaning if you haven't yet. Managers support meaningfulness in the workplace and
go be great.
Thanks for listening to The Weekly Workplace, hosted by the Missouri Training Institute. Dewey, Ray, and Brianna stand ready to connect with you and meet your training needs. Be sure to check out ways to contact them in the episode description. or at mti.missouri.edu.